This is side B of session number 58, recorded on March 10, 2008. Now, when we consider what we just said on side A, looking at the chart, let's see that this chart, since it's about effects preceding causes, that the effects of the present George Bush and his administration would have to have been anticipated by this chart. And since the chart is about Rumpelstiltskin, or that syndrome, from 60 to 90, and then its after image in the Android meme, and then the present state of our communication reality, George Bush has been, as they say, the worst president in history. And the reason is most people felt that they've been lied to, hijacked, ripped off, destroyed, distorted, extrapolated, sent to the moon. Everything has just been a huge, huge hijacking. And that is what little Rumpelstiltskin does. And so since Rumpelstiltskin was the hidden ground of the chart, that effect is multiplied through the decades. We've had earlier, more innocent phases of Rumpelstiltskin. But the maximum version of Rumpelstiltskin today has been certainly expressed by George Bush. If you understand what I'm saying and how that relates to the chart, then you wouldn't agree. You wouldn't disagree, would you?
No.
Yeah. I mean, he has been. You can say what he's done. And remember, it's all about communication. I mean, Bill Clinton's ridiculous scandal was over whether he had sex or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the one that the main thing about Bush is that he's a liar. He didn't even begin to justify anything within the realm of so-called truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a bigger communication issue than whether someone sullied the image of the White House through having a blowjob or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that he lied, I mean, that's the worst thing people can say to you, probably,
mm-hmm.
at least in the West. So so we really have had a Rumpelstiltskin writ large over the last 7 years. So we should look at the chart as how that chart predicted this situation. So I would say that each president in each phase subsumed and built on the image of the previous president. So by the time you get to Reagan, he's building on Nixon, Kennedy, Carter, and Eisenhower, and maybe even FDR, Roosevelt. And then Bill Clinton, he built on previous images. You can see aspects of the previous decades in his image. The different thing about Bush is that he can claim for a few seconds that he's in the tradition of one of those previous images. And the effects of those previous images and their presences can be applied to him. But overall, he's dancing so fast that the resulting image does not communicate, does not compute. And so he gets charged with being the stupidest president we ever had. But actually, if you take different...
Well, the fact of the matter is, things aren't looking so good under his presidency. We have problems with the economy that look dire. People are being killed in Iraq over oil, and we know that he comes from a lineage of oil barons.
Okay, you're saying things aren't looking good under his presidency. How about, since he's only a marginalized image among many images, his image is not looking good under the present. And the present represents a period of non-communication among institutions. And that's what we call the problem of Wall Street, the credit crunch. No communication going on between the banks. They ain't talking. How do they talk? They lend money. They aren't doing it anymore. They lend credit. And the other part of non-communication is that it didn't matter what your state of economic health was, you were given a house. That's not really normal communication, right?
Yeah, well, now they're taking them away.
And there's all kinds of proposals of countering the effects of that being issued by all kinds of institutions in the states, and none of those proposals have any staying power because there's no one to receive them. So they may not be taken away. It's that people believe that they've lost them, so they leave.
Mm-hmm.
But is anybody? And now it's got to the point where, you know, million-dollar houses are sold for $30. I mean, there's a total breakdown of, you could say, rational communication or communication based on standards. So probably what will happen, if it really gets as dire as people perceive, many people are just going to squat in those houses. The ones that left, they could come back and squat in other people's houses, but someone else who's been made homeless will squat in them.
Right.
So the idea of chaos increases.
But they can't have, you know, electricity, power, and heat, and so on. Squatters can't do that.
Well, you occupy houses in the south.
Yeah.
It's warmer. But the what's interesting is that the Fed, in an age of no connected communication, continues to communicate by doing what's considered the irrational, because it just keeps throwing money at the market and killing the dollar, and different factions suffer under that or profit. But they're not based on any. The communication from the Fed is as irrational as Bush seemed.
Bush's economic stimulus package, where, you know, everybody with average income is going to be getting a check for $600, and or twice that if you're married and or have kids or what have you. I don't know how it's all going to work, but, you know, minimum, the average person is going to get, you know, a check for $600 this summer from care of the federal government, so that people will go out and spend money and buy things and stimulate the economy and get some circulation moving in the economy. But I'll bet you odds that what happens when everybody gets their check, they're going to use it. They're going to send it to the credit card company because they owe too damn much money on their credit cards. They're not going to buy anything,
right.
And it's not going to have any effect on the economy at all, except to give more money to the banks that they can lend out to companies that are going to call it a profit and never pay it back.
So there's another example of non-communication. The people aren't going to communicate in the normal pattern of consumption. Consuming is a form of communication. They ain't going to communicate that.
Well, it's not like a stance, or it's like they can't. They're in so deep over their heads into the credit card companies. They got to put the money towards the credit card payment.
But they believe that they're in debt to the credit companies. The credit companies, in a sense, illegally gave them the money, and they never had any money, you know, over the last 10 years. They faked having money.
Yeah.
They faked communication. So everybody can pronounce a standoff and say, you didn't communicate clearly to me, and I'm not communicating back clearly to you. So,
the fact is, if you don't pay your credit card, you're going to get hassled. You're going to have people, you're going to have vultures calling you and on the phone harassing you, threatening you. They're going to ruin your credit. They're going to threaten you all kinds of ways.
But
it's not worth it.
No, you don't have any money anyways. It doesn't matter. It's no longer half the population keeping the other under surveillance, the other half. It is one half the population harassing the other half. And the half that's being harassed can just remember that the ones that are harassing them are being paid not for doing anything economically viable, but just to claim that they're the receiving end of the non-communication, that you should send them the money.
Yeah.
So looks like that is a totally unprecedented social breakdown, so we're going to have some pretty bizarre effects coming from this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people would say, oh, martial law, concentration camps, all kinds of things, but it may not be that form of expression. I mean, a very wealthy person told me the other day his interpretation of Bernanke's speech a week or so ago was that Bernanke said that nobody's going to have a home. And I said, well, how did that come across? Well, what words did he say? He said, the rich person said to me, his actual words were, "We're going to have to seek alternative ways of living." Alternative ways of living. And one of the alternative ways is that you don't own your house anymore. So we have a lot of hallucination or incompleted sentences going on. And actually, everybody was living as if they couldn't complete their sentences all during the Bush administration. It's just Bush mirrored it back to us because he was the one on the spot. He was the one who was supposed to represent the institution that completes the sentences.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, nobody was completing their sentences. If money is speech, then the Enron situation where everybody was giving loans and claiming they were giving loans and the person receiving the loan could claim that they got profit, that's not a normal act of speech. Someone is saying something to you and you're claiming you heard it and you're claiming the opposite meaning. Okay, so looking at the chart, how can you see the present reflected in the decade dance? Do you see anything in the chart that reflects the present based on what we said so far?
Now, wait a minute. The decade dance represents which decade?
The chart was initially an image of the 90s.
Oh, that's right.
And it's an after image of the 60 to 90 period,
mm-hmm.
right? It's after 90.
Right.
And the 60 to 90 period was three or more decades.
Mm-hmm.
And that dance was repeated in the after image. But it was a mere figure for something surfacing called the AP, the Anthropomorphic Physical, that was allowed to feel it was separate,
mm-hmm.
made to feel it was separate from the environments it created and extended. And
well, does that have a correlation to, again, referring to the talk that I heard that Eric gave on the internet, he would mention that one of the effects of the phonetic alphabet was to separate the knower from the known, thus creating a sense of private identity. Is this separation that you're talking about here of that you just mentioned, is that an analog of the visual space separation that occurred within the tribal-minded person when he began to split apart the knower from the known and develop a private sense of identity?
No, I think it's different. I mean it to be different. Might be hard to communicate because I don't want to limit it. This sense of I'm not what's around me has always been in humans, but the communication matrices or matrixes always involve people, and they lost a dominant sense that they weren't what they were talking with and to. So as the Android meme disappears and shrinks, becomes invisible, the human being is confronted with the fact that it is not what is around it, because what it was, if it did identify with it, has disappeared.
Well, another thing, I don't know, again, you can just bounce off and see how what you're saying relates to this idea, was that Eric said that, you know, during the Gutenberg galaxy in 1500s, 1600s, that, you know, there were maybe like 100 books a year being published, so that everyone who was part of the literate culture could easily read every book that had been published that year, if they wanted to. It was no big deal, and so therefore everyone had common sense of everyone had the same ground of experience. They could talk about the same subjects because they were all reading the same things, they were all considering the same ideas, whether they agreed or not. They were all on common ground. This last year, I think Eric said, 200,000 books were published in the United States alone. Well, that means that the literate culture, nobody can read a fraction of those number of books. So there's no common we don't share a common ground.
Okay, I got that. Now, elaborating what I said just before you spoke, the phonetic alphabet separates the via the eye, the knower from the known. Now, let's think of, as the electric environment surrounded us and went inside us, people were feeling like they were in water or that they were surfing. They were inside environment. They didn't have the separation from the visible world via the eye, thanks to the alphabet. They were more and more inside, as the 20th century unfolded, a tactile massage. Now the tactile massage has disappeared, evaporated. So you actually couldn't feel anything.
Mm-hmm.
That might be what I'm trying to get at in terms of the disappearance of the Android meme. So that Second Life represents a hyped up juggling of images of the chemical body landscape, the tactility of interacting in that space, and people obsessed with experiencing it, so that Second Life is not just a nostalgia for the chemical body, it's nostalgia for the tactile TV and chip body. So people would hold on to it and put a lot of energy into it as the sense of feeling anything disappears.
Yeah.
I mean emotional feeling. I mean, actually can't feel the weather. You can't feel the chair you're sitting in. That is the effect of the Android meme disappearing. So it's the resulting thing that's left over, the consciousness that's left over, is not based on a separateness coming from the eye or the ear or the kinesis or the touch. It's a lingering awareness.
Well, I don't know if this doesn't really dovetail with what you're saying, but just some thoughts I had this week, you know, to do a Finnegan's Wake on you and just sort of do a non sequitur in a way, but it's all talking about the same thing. It occurred to me that the TV body, you know, another thing that I keep referring back to Eric's talk, he mentioned the experiment that Marshall did where he put up a screen and projected an image, and people who were sitting on one side of the screen, the light was being reflected off the screen back to them like a movie screen. People on the other side of the screen were seeing the image being projected through the screen, so the image was light through. Now, people who were sitting on the reflected light side of the screen watching the same movie had a kind of their approach to watching the movie was a little more like a movie critic. They were thinking about the camera angles and the lighting and the quality of the acting, and they were kind of taking the whole thing kind of a little more serious. The reflected light's a little more hot medium, it's a little more mental. The people sitting on the light through side watching the same movie were like laughing at all the funny things. They weren't doing critical interpretation of the film technique on the cinema on the director. They were just letting their astral body get touched by the humor or the tragedy, you know. And Eric said at one point some guy, like a psychologist, was sitting on the reflected light side, actually got up and walked around to the other side because he couldn't believe people on the other side were watching the same film. They were reacting emotionally uncensored, and the people on the movie side were not emotionally uncensored. They were more intellectually absorbed in critiquing what they were seeing. So it appears to me that TV, which is light through, is more directly stimulating your astral body, which I see as being kind of your feeling body or more your emotional body. And then if people in Second Life are beginning to actually dream, have dreams about their second life in the chip body, that's really merging the astral body, even to a level that the TV can't do, because I don't think people dream about TV shows very often. So,
no, they do. The psychiatrists report people have dreams about Mickey Mouse and some of the icons. I don't know about particular shows, but maybe they we haven't had a chance to talk to any lately, any psychiatrists. But the media images were going into people's dream life for the last 30
Well, I've never heard as the topic of conversation, you know, people say, who watch a lot of TV saying, you know, have you when did you have your first dream about, you know, the television show? But in Second Life, it's a common topic to say to someone, when did you have your first dream in Second Life?
Right. This experiment you're talking about, quoting Eric, was first done 50 years ago. Now, as you were describing, I thought about how archaic that is. People passively watching a movie, whether it was on a screen, light through or light off. Look at the media experience today and look at the content. What is the main folk art that goes on over the last 10 years? Is the Jackass movement, where people ram things up their rear end or something, or bash their bodies. There's attempt to feel something, right?
Yeah.
In panic mode. Then you have the other folk art of people stuffing themselves, having gigantic contests about how much eggs you can eat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you stuff yourself. It seems to be that the senses are the digestive process, or the inside of the body is being requested to respond, to show that it's still there. The chemical body's digestive process.
Right.
Or internal feeling parts.
Yeah. Like,
you know, exploring pain is what the Jackasses do.
Yeah. Well, I saw this show last night, a new show that's airing called Dexter, about this guy who's this sort of quasi-detective on the police force. And the whole movie was was about someone who was being held captive by a really bad man who was dissecting parts of this guy's body, but keeping him alive, and then putting the you know, like Marshall said, if you put a tennis shoe in the middle of a road, it becomes an art object. He was taking this guy's body parts and putting them around in different locations and propping them up as sort of art pieces. But he was also selecting locations that he knew that this detective named Dexter had. These were scenes of that, of his childhood. So he was doing this weird art head trip thing. But, you know, and it was all about, like, slowly amputating parts of a living chemical body person, you know, keeping the guy alive. And if something like that really happened, it would be the absolute heights of horror. But they were doing the whole thing almost in a tongue-in-cheek way, like, yeah, the body, the chemical body's obsolete, and we're really putting it in your face how much it, you know, it's, we're leaving it behind.
Now, this was a TV show?
Yeah.
Okay, listen to this. I don't see it as the chemical body being ghettoized. It's the, as people move into the post-extended, post-media, which were extensions of us, or amputations of us, as McLuhan said, we're becoming aware that media were amputations of us, and this is a parody of the amputation process, cutting off some part of the chemical body, and then, but sticking it into a museum or a gallery for display means it's a artifact. And that's an expression of the artifactual media that were extended and cut off from our body, right? That numbed us.
Right.
There's an not just abusing the chemical body, which has been going on for 20, 30 years, but there seems to be the fact of communicating the amputation and then putting it into a framework. That seems to be a new level of awareness. It's almost like what I'm saying, the perception that's around now is that, hey, we were extended, but that extension has disappeared. Let's celebrate the process of extension, which includes numbing
mm-hmm.
and amputating. Another example of the lack of feeling is that young people take Viagra. They can't, so-called young people, they can't feel. Now they
claim. Right. Well, they're trying to. It's not that they can't, quote, get it up, unquote. It's that they want to enhance.
That's right, enhance. And that means the normal getting up process is not enough. They
want
to enhance what has been normally a very joyful experience. And enough, thank you. You have an experience like that, then that's good. I had a good experience. But even that doesn't. That has to be supplemented.
Yeah, can
it
we
means
push?
The meaning of the experience, of the original experience, it doesn't communicate anymore.
Yeah.
So it's another form of amputating yourself.
Yeah. Well, people also used pot in the old days to augment sexual
They've
feelings.
Always done that.
Yeah.
But actually violating the differences in the age service and disservice. Older people aren't supposed to have as much sex. Young people have no problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so old people take Viagra. But there's another factor coming in if young people are using it too.
Mm-hmm.
So that both the old people and the young people are both in the numbed, post-stimulated situation.
Well, you know, people will do, kids will do anything to get high. There's a new phenomena which supposedly is affecting, you know, like 1 in 5 kids or something, where they have this practice of somehow choking themselves or putting some kind of noose around their throats and cutting off blood supply to the brain, because then when they loosen the noose, the blood comes flowing back into the brain and they get a big rush. And people and kids are dying from doing this. You know, they're getting themselves, they're, you know, especially when they try to do it alone, unsupervised by friends or anything like that, they'll get themselves into situations where they'll hang themselves and kill themselves.
Right, so there are always kids doing stupid things. That's an eternal condition of humans. But what's interesting is to see how they express the stupid things and what's the underlying pattern, and how today we know, since we have global surveillance, what everybody else is doing, what other age groups or generations are doing, and that's thrown into the pot of inventory of what is the main mood going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So nothing anybody does is in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids, therefore, they have to up the ante to distinguish themselves from the previous generation's profiles. So they commit suicide accidentally with more bizarre forms of expression of it. But the underlying point is they're trying to stimulate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what Arthur Coker may be getting at in his recent book. He said, we're in the boredom culture now. The ground of his noticing the syndrome of the culture of boredom is that nobody can get stimulated because the media doesn't affect them anymore. Not as blatantly as a radio as a massive landscape did, or television, or the printing press. These
right.
caused amazing, even though they weren't seen as causes, they did have incredible stimulation effects on people.
Right.
Now, popularity of Microsoft products or just computer products is people want every 6 months a new upload that will stimulate them.
Mm-hmm.
It's needing to get, it's like McLuhan called it, since the 50s we've been hydraulic jacks. You need to be pumped up.
Yeah.
So now you need all four bodies being stimulated.
Yeah. If you look at what's going on in the movie sector of the younger demographic, it's all torture and horror films.
Yeah.
Extreme, you know. And so that tells me that the movie medium is being pushed to its, you know, it's becoming overheated. It's probably going to flip into something else. Maybe it'll flip into Second Life. I don't know.
But it also means that it's communicating ever since we've had the special effects movement since the late 70s. The special effects are emphasizing now being ripped off, being possessed, or being cut up, or being attacked. Almost like their movies are similar to the Jackass movement.
Mm-hmm.
the movies are stimulating the TV body. Like
right.
The Jackass movement stimulates the chemical body.
The thing I don't get is that, you know, is that when kids, you know, people who are into those kind of movies watch those kind of movies, they get some kind of a thrill sensation from watching the movie. But if anything remotely close to anything they saw in those movies ever happened to their personal lives or chemical bodies, they'd be horrified out of their skulls. But they see it in the movie, and it's just, you know, a lark. People don't seem to...
They've lost sense of their chemical body in the sense that they don't care whether... They're not considering that stimulatable. Can't stimulate it, so they've forgotten about how they would be stimulated if something happened to the chemical body. They are wanting to stimulate their proprioceptive inner central nervous systems or spine, whatever, the glandular landscape inside oneself. That's what they want to stimulate.
Yeah.
And that's the, like, the dangling ganglia that needs to be stimulated. That's the TV landscape. But Second Life may represent another form of hyper jackass mentality or jackass need, where you need to create this whole environment and live in it, and you gotta be in there. It's like nostalgia or panic by the chip body, which fails to intrigue people anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that, if there's no communication, no ability to stimulate, that translates into the economy as no communication, no stimulation between banks. They're not going to communicate. They're not going to stimulate the economy with credit.
Mm-hmm.
So they ain't talking to anybody. They ain't distributing anything. And the consumers aren't going to give their money to the stock market. You know? We've really come to an impasse. I remember when McLuhan wrote an article in Playboy in end of 1968. He said, "Mind your media men or you'll catch a cold environment." Now, the America of 67, 68 started to turn cold in 69, 70 during the Reagan administration. But the warmth that was there in the 60s in a certain level certainly has evaporated, and it's been colder every decade since. So we have an incredible ice age happening, not a global warming, a global freezing going on that McLuhan predicted. I mean, the fact that by the 80s, people wouldn't allow their kids to walk around without being escorted by the parents. They felt that the kids were vulnerable. That's a cold environment. You know what I mean?
Right.
And we've really frozen now. There's nobody to communicate and nothing to communicate.
Yeah.
So McLuhan predicted that. We've caught an ice age now. It's not just a cold environment. Unless you want to say cold environment includes an ice age, but I want to get dramatic here. We've experienced a global... What was that? Ice Nine? Was that the story in Kurt Vonnegut's book? Ice Nine? Something that was a disaster when it came to the planet. But so we've got this... not a dark age. Not an earthquake age. We've got total stasis. Total immobility and paralysis.
Yeah.
Ice age. The ice age has arrived for all four bodies. Now, let's look at the chart here. We've been talking about the present. In retrospect, I can see 911 embedded in my chart, the tiny note chart, but I don't want to go into that right now. But the thing is, you're seeing in each quadrant an ecology of figures interacting and representing a definite technological phase. And they go from 1960 to 1965 to 1970 to 1980 to 1990. I think if you look at each section, like the LaRouche quadrant, you see the quark tune interacting. This is in the middle column. Quark tune interacting with the automobile. We saw the quark tune in the automobile on the formula chart. That was during the Kennedy phase, computer,
right.
And atom bomb as ground. 1945, crystallized in 1960. So you see, quirk to an automobile, but I've brought in other factors, like the beatniks versus the organization man. Organization man can refer to organized crime or just the corporate man. That was a phrase in the 50s, the organization man, a member of the lonely crowd. And then you have eras or civilizations or cities interacting, Egyptian with Paris, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you look at the hadron of the holopathic radio satellite, and holopathic means a level of disappearance, invisibility of inaudibility of the radio satellite environment. And it is one part of a DNA. But because you have adenine, guanine, thymine, cytosine, and then the fifth one, uracil, that turns it into RNA. The first four make up DNA, but when you add in the fifth quadrant, you get uracil, which makes it RNA, and RNA was the messaging part of the genetic code, right? It's referring to the fact that the chart is a memory theater. It's a messaging. It's moods of messaging environments. And because we want to emphasize the disappearance of it as you move into the present situation, you've got to have these slogans mirroring these quantum fluctuations. So you got God is dead, then if it feels good, do it, then the whole world is watching, then staying alive when it's getting harder and harder to stay alive, or at least keep the chemical body alive, and then save the kidney. You don't try to save the whole thing, you just save a part. So it's like your anecdote about the TV show, they cutting off the guy's parts. So as this guy gets cut up and his parts are put in museums, which part will remain? Which part will be saved?
Mm-hmm.
So you bring in the astral theological terms, mental body, causal body, etheric body, astral body, and physical body. You bring in novels like Catch-22, Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, Gravity's Rainbow, Luminous Trilogy, Harlot's Ghost Part 2, which never got written by Norman Mailer. You bring in sports stars, Mickey Mantle, Gordie Howe, Will Chamberlain, Jim Brown, Wayne Gretzky / Magic Johnson. Now, each one of these sports figures or novels or movies, LaRouche Quadrant, The Great Escape, McClune Quadrant, Blow Up, Thompson Quadrant, Easy Rider, Croker Quadrant, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Dobbs Quadrant, The King of Comedy. You have the novel The Great Escape in the time of Catch-22, when the organization man is having a struggle with the beatniks, and the period of McCarthyism and the phrase God is dead. All that makes an ecology. Now, that was a real ecology at that time, 47 to 57. But it gets subsumed by deeper ecologies, which come later. Then all those ecologies evaporate after 1990. So they become subatomic ghosts. So I crammed all these aspects of each phase into each quadrant. But the actual dance of them is what the chart is freezing. To dance from one to the next faster and faster.
Mm-hmm.
The juggling of them. So that the LaRouche Quadrant is the chemical body, McClune Quadrant is the TV body, the Thompson Quadrant is the astral body, Croker Quadrant is the chip body, and then the Dobbs is the actual juggling of all four and them disappearing. Now, when I talk about each one of these being a chip or a body, they actually were landscapes in earlier phases of the chart, so that the chemical body peaked in 1960. It represented the 1947 to 57 period. So that was the chemical landscape. The TV body was a TV landscape in 65, crystallizing 57 to 67. Remember at the bottom it says, waiting for organic bodies, the spinning clothing crystals or crystallizations of Dan Hicks advertisement. So one could look at the fact that world government is a concern in 1960, solar government in 65, universal government, which brings in the astral body, in 1970, and it brings in ET contact. Mythic government is sort of like virtual reality, 1980, and then lockdown Bob Rule. Now, lockdown Bob Rule can refer to me being on YouTube orchestrating my own media, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's that, which a lot of other people are doing. So it's lockdown Scott Rule, lockdown anybody in your neighborhood. If they're on the present state of computer development, that they can create their own little communication broadcast. Lockdown Bob Rule can mean other things as well as that. All right?
Mm-hmm.
You take the category of the novels, and you notice that each novel represents an era. Gravity's Rainbow came out in 73. That era is very different from the middle 60s, represented by Electric Kool-Aid Estes, which was a novel that came out about 1970, but it wrote about the 1965 period. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The moods that each quadrant are supposed to represent, these moods are evoked by the associations in each quadrant for that era. So it's a simple inventory of different mood zones, time zones, and then in the 90s, through increased data collection and data broadcasting and data access, like if I think of anybody, I just need to slip over, check my wiki to find out when he or she lived, right? Get the dates. Imagine before, if you had a chance, you might on the weekend go to the library and look it up. Or you might have the book in your home, but it'd be a lot slower. I can check out facts so much faster now, but the facts are just to supplement my thinking process. Why would I bother communicating the fact? It's like I'm using the facts for my own stimulation and making a temporary pattern.
Right.
It's very,
and to use the word facts is to sort of fudge a little bit, because a lot of universities, when students are doing graduate work, they're actually not allowed to use Wikipedia as a reference, because a lot of the stuff in there hasn't been isn't necessarily true. It's true by consensus of whoever put it up there, but it's not for doing, research, where you really do have to cite your sources and go back to the original documents and all that kind of stuff.
The university's hoik up visual space. They want you to go back and use your eye.
Yeah.
And they're attempting to be an anti-environment to the present ground, which is Wikipedia and all the content all around us. All the answers, as McLuhan would say, are outside the schoolroom. But the schoolroom, like a fundamentalist, what I call mythic stage, reinforces its function, panic mode, and say, no, you can't use what's immediately available. We're here to represent a past mode of perception, and you have to use that mode. Mm-hmm. Kind of fundamentalism.
Yeah.
It's a devotion to a technological phase.
Right.
So that my chart is showing what is around us, the dance of moods that more and more people grow up going through, so that the kids, they don't have particular details about what Abbie Hoffman did, but they can go to a new movie called Chicago 10 now, or they can go to YouTube and see the trailers and see aspects of it. and get a cartoon version of what went on, but that's good enough for them to get a sense of that period.
Mm-hmm.
So that the reference point is not chemical body experience, it's what McLuhan called a memory theater. That's what the new Abbie Hoffman movie is about. It's a memory theater for the events of the late 60s. What I have as the yippee in the Thompson Quadrant, that's being hoiked up as a mood in this docudrama, half of it animated. But the dancing around through these, now we use the word memes, which were created by collective media, but then as the collective media breaks down and evaporates, you have the afterimage of memes. So the kids more and more know, have experience through the memory theater of what it was like when people actually lived slow enough to battle over their memories.
Yeah, a lot of kids grew up listening to rock and roll from the 1960s, but they grew up in the 80s or 90s and then sort of had a nostalgic belief.
Not nostalgic for them.
Yeah.
It was new for them.
Yeah.
They might have thought, oh, this, if they knew it, that it came from previous decades, and they might have called it nostalgia and label themselves as retro or something.
Right.
But the actual kids today, they don't have enough of that.
Well, I think they idealized that period as being sort of the time of Eden.
For the chemical body.
For the chemical body, yeah.
But nowadays the kids have less access to a place where there was a chemical body. I mean, the chemical body evaporated in the 60s, so it was the last supernova of it. Now the kids can hear something. I know this mother told me that their kids and friends were into Queen or one of those groups from the 70s,
mm-hmm.
and they couldn't believe that their mother experienced that band 30 years before. They thought it was a recent band.
Oh, yeah.
So that you can see with the information overload and the lack of the chemical body experience that these kids would be way off in terms of what time it was that some song came from.
Mm-hmm.
It really is getting to what the Evergreens predicted in their session on, it's called A Day in the Life of a Man in the Year 2078. So it was 100 years after the reading, which was done in 1978. And they describe the life of a 14-year-old inside a matrix tube who traveled a lot, had a girlfriend, had this whole detailed life, and loved the life that it thought it was having. But it actually never left its room.
Mm-hmm.
Yet had 14 years of life it thought it was living.
Mm-hmm.
That's where this is leading towards.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard a guy on the radio the other day wrote a book on the feminization of the male culture in America and around the world.
And Henry McCow?
I don't remember, maybe.
Okay.
And the child man, I think they call him now. These are 30-year-olds who still haven't grown out of their adolescence. They don't want to leave home. They have no interest in getting married. They have no interest in getting a job. They're happy to, you know, sit in their room and
use their chip body or TV body.
Yeah, right. And their testosterone is down by 30%, 40%, 50% of what male testosterone used to be for people in their age range. It used to be 1 in 20 men, you know, would still be living at home at the age of 30. Now it's 1 in 5, and women aren't interested in marrying them because they lack motivation and so.
Women motivated?
The women are becoming more motivated. The women are becoming more masculine. And the way that I interpret that is that if tactility is squared, it has an effeminizing acoustic effect, it's eroding the masculinity that's inside of men. It's heating up the femininity within women and flipping them into their opposites.
Yeah, it's like collectively East goes West and West goes East, because tactility, no culture had it extended like it is. So it's a threat to every cultural modality or every cultural meme, just like it's a threat to either the right hemisphere or the left hemisphere. And so people put on the opposite hemisphere as a defense mechanism to shore up a, you know, the ruins of some kind of solid identity in relation to the nothingness, which I've been describing. The every, remember, tactility is not a sense.
No, it's the interplay of the senses or the interplay of the media forms.
And there's no content in there. It's an effect, but no content. So that, and that's one thing the chart represents. The chart has no content on the same level or motive that Finney's Wake expressed. There's no content in the chart, but it's showing a rapid movement or sub-quantum fluctuations. That nothingness externalized makes people put on their opposite, what they aren't, as a shield. So yeah, the men go, quote, feminine, and the women go male. Just like the Chinese go west and we go east.
Mm-hmm.
Or north-south kind of became the pattern. That's the going to the Amazon, hanging out with the shamans, the Terrence McKenna thing. By the 90s, it was a north-south flipping. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like all the Central Americans flooding into the United States, supposedly to get money to send back home. But they're probably just trying to find another culture,
like
the Chinese were doing, to hide in. So they come here and work for nothing. And I don't know if you can say they have a lonely life, but they have a strange life here. But they like it because it gives them a shield to the global nothingness. And I don't mean nothingness as a value judgment.
Yeah.
I mean nothingness as a technical condition of rapid movement that's so rapid that it's either defined as not going anywhere, as the ice age, the paralysis, or it's a blur.
Yeah.
And you get to enjoy the blur by taking drugs.
Well, yeah, but now what do you think about this? The guy that wrote the book on the feminization of the masculine race, at least in the white Caucasian world, you know, thinks that the middle class Caucasians are basically headed towards extinction, and that by 2050 this country will be owned and run by Catholic Hispanics and fundamentalist Christians, all of whom believe in getting married and having big families as part of their faith. They're the ones that are going to repopulate and replenish America.
Yeah, but they won't own the country. They will occupy the geographical zone. At least one quarter of themselves will. And every 4 years they can celebrate some politicians they elect into chemical body options.
But how come they're not going to disappear like the rest of us?
No, they are going to disappear. They're only going to occupy one quarter of themselves. They're going to be, their kids are going to be more and more in the tip TV and chip body too.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, you see, what I'm interested in is how long the TV body remains a separate thing. We know that media are converging, but people are making a separation by retrieving the function of the TV body as a secure zone compared to the ongoing frontier of the chip body experience.
Mm-hmm.
So they're keeping them separate. But what happens if they totally collapse, which is what you're saying is going to happen on Second Life? Everybody's going to be living everything. They're going to be making TV programs on Second Life.
Yeah.
Their avatars will be.
Oh yeah, no, people, they have, you can get a virtual camera and take pictures, and in Second Life you can walk around with a little video camera. Somebody was complaining in this podcast I was listening to, this woman was complaining that she was, you know, trying on some new skins or something. She was in like in a compromised position where her hair wasn't the way she liked it and stuff, and somebody in Second Life came in and took a movie of her, and then the movie started floating around in Second Life and she started feeling violated because somebody, you know, caught her on film in a compromised position, you know, in her little comic book Avatar thing.
the comic book Avatar felt violated.
No, she did. She was like, oh, my God, you know, I was, yeah, you know, she was angry.
No, nobody could see who that she's chemical body was.
No, but she felt, you know, she felt like she did something, you know, she did something stupid and paid the consequences, you know. She should have been more careful because now something happened and she experienced it as a violation.
Well, Baudrillard used to write about in the 80s and 90s about how the arguments over racial identity and all these things were figure for the ground, and the ground fact was that we didn't know what our origins were anymore because we'd been simulated. So identity became part of the culture wars and the political correctness wars. Now, those are images of the chemical body in the TV landscape becoming TV body. Now, it's beyond what Baudrillard's talking about. People are arguing over what their avatar went through and what humiliations or ecstasies it experienced, not about their chemical body tribal identities. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that it's squared what Baudrillard talked about. You got these people. He would complain about people arguing over what happened in history and the revisionists of this and that. He said that those weren't real media anymore. Now you got people arguing and having angst in some part of their consciousness, which is not the avatar, I guess, within Second Life.
Yeah. Well, you know, this woman has friends in real life who she hangs out with in Second Life. So when she got caught in a compromised position and then she meets her friend at work the next day, then, you know, the joke continues in real life and it has reverberations and repercussions that she doesn't like.
But she wasn't violated. The avatar was.
Yeah, but she was operating it, and she thought that, you know, she wasn't careful enough, or she made a mistake or something, and that it cost her some violation.
Yeah, so that's the part of.
I mean, people invest, you know, in all kinds of, you know, their game chips or whatever, in all kinds of games.
Right, and the part that's not those things.
Yeah.
Gets involved.
Yeah.
And has anxieties.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about people taking literally incidents that are supposedly fake entertainment environments, and the anthropomorphic consciousness that thinks it's not those things gets affected by that.
I mean, just think in real life, if I go in with my, you know, if I go into a gambling casino with $1,000 in my wallet and I lose all that money and I really couldn't afford to lose it, I'm going to feel really bad. Most people would. I mean, they just would feel like they really fucked up. But you know, money is just a token, right? And, you know, I mean, it has more power in the real world 3D of 3D than it does in Second Life. But Linden dollars, money that you have in Second Life, those dollars actually account for something that is a reverberation of the real money that you spend in real life. You have to be economic and wise with how you spend your money in Second Life, or you're not going to get anywhere.
Where do you get?
Well, where you get is that you keep upgrading until your avatar starts to reflect your personal style, your taste, your personality, and where it starts to become more literally attractive. Some of these avatars, the way that, you know, real artists are getting in there with airbrushes and stuff like that, they're creating avatars that, honest to goodness, are attractive. They have a healthy glow, and they have a certain power in their stance or their walk or their posture or their, you know, the way they do their fashion statement and all that kind of stuff. This, but you know, particularly means, you know, the fashion statement thing means tends to mean more to women than it does to men, you know. Yeah. I mean, there are places in there where you can shop for shoes, you know, and these women, you know, so women tend to be more fetishized, you know, shoes and boots and stuff like that. And they do it in Second Life just like they do in the real life.
Let me say this. You can't use your Linden dollars to pay off your mortgage.
Well, you could if you bought property in Second Life.
Is that property habitable with the chemical body?
No.
Right. So I'm talking about the debts the chemical body has. Can't use Linden dollars.
No, but if you're creative enough in Second Life to be able to make artifacts that other people are willing to pay Linden dollars for, at some point you can start translating those into real U.S. dollars.
Right. So.
So you could pay your rent, your mortgage.
Yeah, and some people are making money in chemical body terms.
Oh, lots of people. You know, there's only one person to ever become a millionaire from doing it so far. But lots of people are earning supplemental income in there, and quite a few people are actually moving towards having that sustain their chemical body lifestyle.
Okay, so we need to end, but... I'll say this, or leave you with this: what is the thing in there that doesn't think when pressed that it is those avatars or the chemical body? The thing that goes through this struggle or this angst that you say people have when they go from second life to work, they're embarrassed. What is that thing that's having the angst? I'm saying that's the anthropomorphic physical. That's the thing that is caught between identifying with some action that a virtual avatar did and knowing that isn't exactly what they are.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Why do they have the anxiety? What'd you say?
Yeah. But the thing about the Second Life is that I think it's safer to have those kinds of experiences. See, the kind of humiliation that the woman experienced with her avatar, if in real life she had experienced that humiliation, you know, she'd been caught, you know, naked somewhere and somebody photographed it and it got on the internet, that could have a real psychological impact on her, even possibly a scarring effect or a deep grievance that she might not get over for a long time. But, you know, that it happened in Second Life, you know, she could, it had the same effect, but on a tiny holopathic level, that she could kind of, she could laugh it off at the same time she could go through the experience.
And have the anxiety.
And have the anxiety.
There's the, my point, is they have to use their chip body, not only their chemical body or astral body, to stimulate something they can't feel anymore. So she gets agitated about something that happened there because she wants to experience agitation, which then makes her think she's something opposed or separate from what's around her. So it's getting more and more paradoxical. They got to use what's not to affirm that they're not. Even though what the apparently is,
well,
not.
I'm not sure I would agree with that. It may be true in some sense or in some cases. In her case, when I heard her podcast and she was on with her friend, they seemed like two healthy women who were actually had healthy lifestyle, were having fun in life, had real jobs and real relationships that were working for them. And then they had this Second Life where they could experiment, like I just indicated, on a holopathic level with little sort of dangerous things that they would be afraid to toy with in real life, but they could have the experience in there. And if it didn't work out, well, you know, nobody's really getting hurt.
That's another thing Bogard said, was that more and more people are getting so secure that outbreaks of biological panic like AIDS surface to reassert real risk and danger.
Yeah.
So there's probably going to be side effects from the Second Life thing.
Well, you know, also I recall, whether it's true or not, a metaphysician once saying that, you know, if you had karma such that you were about to have some, you know, you were headed towards some kind of a car crash or something like that, and if you on the astral plane experienced having that car crash, you could sort of interrupt and process that karma before it actually hit the physical plane or the chemical plane. You may be able to do that in second life. You may be able to work out little karmic situations on a homeopathic scale that don't have to actually occur in the real world and save yourself a lot of grief. But that would be the flip side of what you're saying.
Yeah, but you're assuming that it's less real. More and more evidence shows that it's as real as the chemical body life.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think that it may be real, but it's tiny, so it's manageable. You know, I mean, you're God in that universe. Just like your soul may be much bigger than your chemical body anthropomorphic identification with yourself. Your soul may not have a big problem when your body gets wiped out, but if your anthropomorphic sense of yourself is identified with your body, it's a big deal to you. Well, you know, your anthropomorphic physical body may be able to create a little token of itself in a little second life space and be like, you know, be the soul to that thing, where to you it's no big deal if your avatar really gets wiped out, but on some level you are learning from that experience.
Okay, so what McLuhan, LaRouche, Thompson, Croker are warning us about is that what you think is safe inevitably will surprise you and become a problem.
Yeah.
That's the big assumption each one of them expresses.
Well, that's always often true with things that people use for escapism. You know, pop a few pills, and the first few times you do it, it's fun, and
right.
but then it starts to become a habitual, sort of unconscious kind of a habit, and then it starts to become dangerous.
Okay, so the way this is dangerous, since the second life is part of the internet medium, which evaporated money and everything for the chemical body, these people for the next few months may be enjoying their second life, but then all of a sudden they're arrested and put in a concentration camp. Now, they probably don't see that coming, but history shows that you must expect flips and reversals like that.
Mm-hmm.
In the 20s and 30s, nobody knew that they would end up in a concentration camp.
Right.
And be gassed. But in retrospect, you can see that radio, ghettoized, began to ghettoize the chemical body, and the chemical body was expendable. And the Jews got caught in the conflicts that the radio was doing to the economy in Europe.
Right.
So, I mean, there are doctors now who say the young kids today will be dead at 35. And they apply health reasons.
Right.
Largely. So, maybe one of the syndromes is what you're talking about. These kids have no testosterone, nothing.
Yeah, and there's nothing that can be done for them. This doctor who wrote this book said that, you know, housewives call him all the time saying, what am I going to do with my son? And he says, well, how old is he? Well, he's 30. And he basically says, well, it's too late. There really is nothing we can do. We got to catch them when they're still, you know, 8, 9 years old and get them from going into this syndrome to begin with. But once they get that far into the syndrome, there's nothing that can be done.
So there's a tragedy.
But see, now I look at my nephew who's going into this syndrome big time, even bigger than any 30-year-old's alive today, and I wonder if he's going to flip into something new, something unforeseen or unpredictable, you know, and not actually fall into that trap. I don't know.
So I'm tempted to say, well, we'll only get something new if we have cold fusion as an environment. But aside from that, it's just that these kids, this 30-year-old, was given when he was 10 or 12, you know, 15 years ago, was given a Christmas present, some little computer.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents were happy to give it to him. Didn't know they were bringing a bomb in the house.
Yeah.
So let's end with the point that we don't know what the weapon is. We don't know what is dangerous anymore.
Yeah.
So you can get paralyzed. That's why these guys don't leave the house. They don't know what's dangerous anymore. So anything could be dangerous. So you're safe where you are right now.
Right.
So you don't move.
Right.
So, I think that's it.
Okay. Very good. So we'll do this again next week, signing off for today.